Incoming message coming from a friend of the 588.
Welcome to Tabletop. My name is Nick, and I think that fudging dice rolls is totally okay.
Hey, it's me, Franco, and rolling for initiative sucks.
I'm Daniel, and I think you should modify your first level characters as much as you want.
And I'm Shade, and if your TTRPG hasn't evolved into a LARP, you've done it wrong.
And we all host Tabletopped, a TTRPG podcast about all things games and storytelling.
And sometimes we have game designers, professional researchers, and even the occasional owlbear.
If this interests you, listen to Tabletop every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts. Tabletop is a proud member of the Helios Network.
Let's pause for a second because Elsa just texted the group.
Oh, Look at that!
Look at that! That's incredible.
No.
Welcome to the hangar, everybody, where we thought we had all the wing women back from July.
Close.
But
We're so close.
Of technology have intervened, and Elsa, who can hear us but maybe can't respond, try Elsa. Yeah, she can't talk.
Now, I would like to use my Sherlockian powers of deduction on something for a second. At 6:40 p.m., Elsa posted in the StreamYard chat, "Hi, yes, I am eating jambalaya, don't judge me." And then a suspiciously short amount of time later, we're having mysterious technical issues.
Incredible, Sherlock!
Stop, the jambalaya had nothing to do with this, she alleges. I just have a shitty laptop.
Oh.
Well, if any of this is usable.
It'll be funny. I hope.
Hello, hello, and welcome to The Hangar. This is the show where we talk about the podcast Wing Women, which if you have not listened to yet, please don't listen to this. We are joined for the very first time all together since August of 2023, and we are definitely going to be talking about some spoilers, some character arcs, some favorite moments of season one. So if you haven't listened to that in its entirety already and you don't want to be spoiled, go on back and listen. And since it's been a bit since we have been in your ears, we're going to reintroduce ourselves, starting with me. Hi, my name is Julianne Kastner. My pronouns are she, they, and I play Tatiana Kutzmana, and I also edit Wing Women.
Hi, my name is August Hawkfog. I use they, them pronouns, and I play Ninochka Filipovna. And I spent my time away learning how to say my character's name, but none of yours.
Hello, hello. My name is Elsa Kegelman. My pronouns are she, her, and I play Rita Vasilyevna on the podcast Wing Women. And that's all I do.
Hi, I'm Kevin, and I play everybody else.
Hi there. I'm Madison Cadullo. My pronouns are she, they, and I play Dmitria Volkova. And I spent my time away almost finishing crocheting a sweater.
That's kind of, that was a very, this is what I did on summer vacation, but it was fall, winter, early, now we're treading towards spring vacation.
This is the very first time that we are recording virtually in our brand new setups, our individual setups, and we're really excited about that. This is a little test. We're going to see how it goes. And we're also going to talk about season one, which you guys sent in some questions like a million years ago. So why don't we talk about them?
And first up with those questions, I'm going to restate a couple from the episode of The Hangar that Julianne and I did in October. But we want to start with Will Cloud and open up to the group. How much preparation goes into each session for each of you, and how much is yes and?
So I feel like I already alluded to this, but Wing Women is kind of the project in my life where I just let myself show up. I don't really do much homework. I just kind of arrive and trust that Rita will be there within me as she is within all of you and will rear her beautiful head whenever she feels like it. In life, I do try to be like the most prepared person in the room, but this is the project where I just let myself have fun, and I'm very grateful to the rest of the group for doing their homework so that I don't have to. And yeah, that's probably why I make the most anachronistic references out of everybody, because I don't spend time studying when the first roller coaster was built and just assume that it was there.
Rita Vasilyevna is our savior. She lives in us as she lives in all of your spirits.
The Rita within me recognizes the Rita within you.
And Rita be with you.
And also with Rita.
Also with you. I feel like I prepare backwards. I did a lot of character work way at the beginning of the campaign, and then every time we play a session, I have looked at all of you. All of you have been very kind and been like, August, do you want me to drive you home? Or in the case that it's in my house, oh, August, you want me to help you clean up? And I go, no, I need to debrief. And I would spend the entire walk home recontextualizing the things that we said that I couldn't plan for and fitting them into, okay, where does Nino stand on all of this? And just getting that figured out. And then over the course of the next couple of weeks, however long it would take for us to record, I feel like I'm a crazy person, because dead ass what I do is I sit there and from what we did in the previous game, I figure out what statistically is a question that's going to be asked of Nino. And like, what are the big questions? What are the big questions that could be asked? And I need a response, and I need to know what the response is, and I need to know well enough so that it'll just pop out in the moment. And so I will practice at home. I'll stand in the kitchen and I'll be like,
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who does this.
One day someone is going to ask me, oh, give me 2 seconds to think of an example. Oh, no, that's what it was. One day someone is going to ask Nino dead, like straight on, well, aren't you gay in some way? And I know that the answer is going to be, don't you finish that sentence, and like that kind of thing. That's what I would prepare on. Other than like specific questions, I just kind of like let you guys throw stuff at me because it's so fun. You guys always come up with stuff I don't expect, and I'm like, yeah, great, I get to recontextualize this in a fun, new, funky way later. It makes my commutes very interesting.
I also feel like I kind of prepared backwards, but it was that I front loaded a lot of my preparation, and then, what an actor thing to say, but like, it's much more fun for me to figure out a hole in my own backstory or in my own characterization by making a decision about it in the moment. So I try not to pre-plan too much about what's going to happen, because I don't think that I'm being genuine if I have, like, I have one-liners or certain responses generally that I'm like, yeah, that will, that nothing else would align so much with who she is, but at the same time I'm kind of like, whatever happened in the beginning of this episode might have been wild enough that it could have just completely altered my trajectory. So like, I just opened my notes app. That's what I was doing just now, is like looking down at my phone, because I was like, I took notes the last time we played in August, and I want to make sure that like I'm continuing to do whatever I was thinking about at that point. And literally it's one question. And I won't say it for spoilers, but it's one half-written question. And I was like, I definitely thought I would remember what I meant by that and didn't expect that we would pick this up 6 months later.
That's also an incredibly, like, that is what Demetria would do, would be just like, I'll write something down. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck. And it's That's just what a I mean, picture of like, a crow that has a question mark on it.
Not to be like, what an actor thing to do, but it's like that she's both completely prepared and completely unprepared, so edit this for spoilers, I guess. What does ask Tati mean?
Oh yeah, big spoilers on that one. Big
yeah,
spoilers.
Well, I don't know.
The horrible thing is, I know exactly what you're trying to ask. You can edit this out for spoilers. I would bet you money that you just wanted to write down that you wanted to ask, you wanted to get the story from Tatiana about what happened at the bar. Because you only got it from me. I said, oh, she felt sick. She stepped outside.
Oh, right.
I lied to you. There you go. Here's a hint. Here you go. I lied to you.
And I would never expect you to lie to me, so I don't know if that's it, though.
Ah, fair enough.
I have a playlist that I listen to on days, because it has a lot of, like, just fun little music that also just gets me excited, because I feel very much like that scene in Frozen when Anna wakes up and she's like, it's coronation day! And I'm like, oh my god, it's recording day! And I'm just like, and I put on my playlist with all of my gay sapphic shit, and it's very fun. But my preparation is more technical, and now it's not easier, it's different because we're virtual, where it's just like, I have now someone, and you've heard me, I tumble over my words all the time. So it's like, I've really needed to listen and try and be a more effective communicator so that we can troubleshoot things. Like when I'm not there to adjust a mic or check something. So like that's definitely something that is prep that I'm gonna have to keep in the back of my brain bone for that. I also had an idea for Tati and it turned into something else because I think of all of the preparation that I was doing, that it's less like I just use so much of my spoons setting up that I'm like, I just need this character to be something that I can just turn off my brain and just be like the most instinctual thing. And it turned from her being this Machiavellian villain to a literal cinnamon roll who does not know what she's doing, but she is very smart.
Was Tati supposed to be a villain?
I wanted her to be a little meaner. I wanted her to be a little snobbier and a little meaner.
Like a Darla Dimple.
Yeah, like a Darla Dimple.
And then Julianne opened their mouth and...
Yeah. I feel like what we've described, how everyone has described their approach to playing their character is very reflective of their character. Not necessarily who we all are in life, like, because I made the clear distinction, like, I'm a preparer in life, but Rita trusts that she's just going to know what to do. So I just show up and let things happen because I trust Rita, frankly. Whereas it sounds like you guys, you're like, yes, I'm thinking I am planning for situations, and I've heard that come out as your characters in character when we're playing and we're faced with situations. So it's just funny to hear that come out of character as like, yeah, this is how I approach playing. And it's like, that is also how your character is.
I don't want to bring up a different game too much, but I was just talking about this with someone that I'm playing in a different TTRPG with, about how the way that we conceptualized both of our characters and how we've actually started to play them is so wildly different, because like you can, like, with a little Machiavellian villain, like, you can want to play someone who's so self-centered, or I mean, like, that's the real life example, is that I really wanted my character to be like very self-serving and like, I'm only part of this group as long as it like affects me to stay and benefits me to stay. And then we both started playing and both of us realized, we're like, damn, I think this character might be growing along with me or something, IDK.
Yeah, and be like, I'm so lonely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I actually have to cling to this group.
The idea for me also when I'm playing is that I have to do something that's both in character and serves the story. Like, mm-hmm. We're not just playing a game, we're telling a story. So if you're playing D&D 5e with a group of people, and you make the choice, like, my character is an outsider who lives on the edge and I'm so self-serving and I don't need this group, you're not going to have a lot of fun. Your other players aren't going to like playing with you, and you're not going to actually do very much. So that's all like antithetical to storytelling with a group of people. So there have been times when maybe the most Rita, or there was a Rita choice that would have separated me from the group or drawn boundaries between me and the group that wouldn't have been compelling as a story. Like, there's conflict and then there's like, no, I don't care what you guys do. So it's all about like, it's kind of like the SATs or like, you know, actor brain. Like, you have to make the choice that's both in character and, you know, the light doesn't fall on your head. As I'm sure many people who listen to this, because we're all big nerds, are also theater people, like, you have your blocking, like, you know where you have to go, and you have to justify it in a way that is in character for you. So I will stop doing actor talk now. We're 22 minutes into the recording.
No.
What's going to happen is I'm going to turn it into a playwright talk, because I think about it in exactly the same way, just from the opposite angle. Because while I'm like, looking back on the previous session and like backwards preparing, I'm like, okay, where could I see, because I trust Kevin as a storyteller, because he also is a playwright and is also an actor and is very good at this. I'm like, okay,
accept our compliment.
Kevin is turning red as a tomato right now.
I'll only do it the once.
It's just the warm lighting in my room.
He's definitely not blushing.
No, I I trust Kevin. Like, I trust Kevin to tell a good story, and I know he's going to give us something interesting to play with. So whenever we leave a session after he has given us, like, a whole bunch of fun things to play with, I can walk around and go, okay, what are the most interesting choices from here? Like, what are some situations that we might be able to find ourselves in? And then reverse engineer back and be like, okay, how can this, like, not in like a railroady way, but in a, okay, I can see where the themes of each character are going. I can see how each character is thinking. Where are those points converging to? And how can I do my best to get there in a Nino way? And it's fun. It is such a fun exercise, and I like doing it with you guys. I think every actor should do, maybe just short of everyone should do improv, and every actor should do like live acting at some point, you know? Like,
if you're an actor and you don't book a lot of work, start doing D&D with your friends.
You will be able to create the characters you want to play and you want to see in the world. And it's so fun.
And I'll go one step further. If you want to be an actor and you don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on acting school, join a really good D&D group, because I learned all the same lessons there.
Alternatively, if you loved doing theater growing up and you were like, this can't really be my career, or I don't have the time or energy or resources to do community theater, or, you know, you love that feeling of performing and being somebody else who's also a little bit of you for 3 hours on a random Thursday afternoon. Yeah, do D&D, because it's essentially the same thing.
To go back off something Elsa said, like, to make the Rita choice that might have alienated you from the group for a second, like, I just think that you, like, in a good story, need to be able to earn those things too. So, like, the thing that I think about with, like, the 5e party with the one loner character, that always rears its head, like session one, where you're like, we have to contrive a reason for everybody to need to do the same thing so that you are a party. Otherwise, that one loner character, realistically, according to their character, would just go away and do their own thing. But now we all have our hooks in each other to a degree that if Rita made a Rita decision, there's a motivating reason for one of us to be like, come back here, or let's continue a relationship, even if it's contentious. It's not like, okay, let her go. Who were you?
Yeah, you know, I feel like the scaffolding around our story, which is that we are all in a unit together, helps. But also, like, I'm sure there are plenty of people, or maybe there are people in units with other people who they're not friends with, they don't fuck with, they don't talk to them.
I'll link that with, there's a real life phenomenon of people who go to war, and you read a lot of these stories in World War II, where people who from wildly different backgrounds who would have nothing in common whatsoever, just by dint of surviving really intense traumatic experiences together and trying to, in whatever ways they had available to them in the 40s, like, process them, they do become friends for life, even though they don't have a lot in common. So it is a big benefit to kind of circumventing that loner streak in the structure of our story. One thing I'll say on the preparation thing, just in kind of in tandem with what August was saying, is I mentioned this before, but I try to prep interesting situations, and I know, like, an episode or a session is, like, maybe not ideal if I haven't prepped situations that compel you all to act in some kind of way. Whether or not that's the way I anticipated, that's fine, because to use the party as an example, I kind of didn't have a plan for Rita once you guys got into the cellar, and I think that read. Like, there wasn't a lot of tension left once we got there, so I felt a little bad about that compared to Tati, who I'd kind of created this character of. I want to create a physical being that's going to challenge Tati's perception of their sexuality, and what I thought might happen is that Tati was going to have an explosion of gay, and that she was going to be overthrilled and have a wonderful, like, oh, this can be pleasurable. And what instead happened in the episode, which I thought was much more interesting, and I will give to Julianne's credit, is that it was a real moment of crisis. And I hadn't planned on that, but I think everyone played it really well. And I do think that is the strength of this room. Is that everyone's very good on picking up when the new thing crops up, in actor and writer brain, as everyone here, I think, has to some extent. Everyone's very good on picking up on the cue and running with it, which I really love, which links me to the next question, which is from Mar Soltar, whose name is going to get said a few times during this, little recording. Since we all know each other, what player choices have we not expected from each other?
I can actually hop onto this, specifically from that moment in the cellar, like Tati coming out. And like that specifically also stemmed from my experience of just like the first time, like I got a little scared because I was just like, oh gosh. I don't know if this is a quintessential queer experience where it's just like the first time you actually consider it, you're like, oh no, no. And you get a little nervous about it. I was, when August was just like, Nino's going to go out, me, Julian was like, oh my God, thank God. Thank God Nino's here. I'm going to get like a nice heartwarming little thing of being like, hey, you know what? You know what? It's okay. It's like, I'm gay too. And I'm like, oh my God. But instead, Nino's just like, nope, you just gotta push it down. You just gotta...
Julianne, I need you to know that my favorite moment recording so far was watching the light bulb turn on in your eyes as you realized you weren't getting what you thought you were. And realizing, oh, that's how we're playing it. And then immediately going into, fuck yeah, all right. And like, I watched you start to nod. And like, you were still saying like, but I don't understand. And you were like nodding along like, yeah, 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 yeah. Like it's, I wish we had done this setup like in season one, if only so that everyone could see the look on their face. It was fantastic. And I knew that was always going to be the answer because I was like, you know what?
Someone's going to say it. And it's going to be Tati with her fucking big mouth.
Someone is going to spill the secret. And honestly, Sasha kind of did it before any of us. Like, kudos to Kevin on giving her such an interesting character distinction. Like, It was Sasha who brought it into the conversation and kind of like put that undercurrent within the four of us and our story. And I had told Kevin before session one, I was like, I think Nino's thing is that she's never, like, she's not for it. I think that's her thing. And I think it's going to catch people off guard. And it worked. It fully worked. I was like, I know my friends. I know what they're going to think. I'm not giving that to them. I think it's more interesting to have the mama bear character be like, actually, no. We're not going to say that out loud. That's wrong.
Damn, they played my own stereotypes against me.
Well, so
I'm playing 4D chess over here, man.
I'm sitting here and going back to Kevin's point, like, oh, I felt bad that Rita didn't have a lot to do. Sometimes, hello, fellow straight people out there, not every story is your story. So going into that scene knowing, like, I see. This is a bevel, you know, or what's it called? This is a buffet for my fellow players. I'm going to give myself a reason to take a back seat in this, you know, following scene, and that's fine. Me, Elsa, completely saw where Ninochka was coming from. And, like, I was not actually that surprised when that interaction popped out the way it was. But that's probably just because of what we, the players, know about each other's characters. And I think what's funny is that for Tati, like, had she gone to, and I think she does end up going to Dimitri and gets kind of like a more mixed response or a middlingly encouraging response.
Like, we don't say what it is, but we're just like, maybe this is fine. Maybe this is fine.
Yeah.
We don't say what it is, but there is the undercurrent of being encouraged to be irresponsible at the heart of it. Because if we're not actually addressing what it is, we're not actually addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we had a reversal. The reason I was going to say the exact same moment that you did is because it's like Nina was so much more ready to like both say exactly what was going on and then encouraged to like never bring it up again. And I feel like Demetria just kind of like walked the line of like, oh, I'm smelling what you're stepping in and I think it's pretty cool, which is like two halves of terrible advice.
It's so on par for both of them. I think where Nino is a rule follower first and person second in their mind, where it's like they've been through it literally. And so they don't it is not like what they want is not important to them. And so they're more likely to come forward and say, nope, we're not doing this. This is done. Don't bring it up again. We're done. Even if it comes off as hostile. Whereas Dimitri is more like, I'm going to mix around and we're going to play in the gray area. To Ninochka, that's not a gray area. They had the gray area beat out of them. If we're talking about moments that surprised us, I think we all surprised ourselves, I think, once that Sasha reveal came out. I guess it was more like Kevin surprised us. I was like, God damn it, Kevin. You've said the one thing that would make me reconsider my relationship with this woman.
This horrible person.
But if I recall correctly, we also surprised Kevin. Kevin was like, I didn't think you guys were going to help her.
I didn't think it would be that much of a debate. I truly, when that turned into a whole episode, I thought it was going to be either a very quick, oh, this is an opportunity to screw people over, and we would learn something about the show in terms of like how much you would lean into the Soviet side of it, or we have to do the right thing, which is how much you would lead into the community and communist side of it, which is protecting your own, even if that person isn't maybe the most ideal person to have around.
They're still the best pilot.
Yeah. I just was surprised at how just the length to which that discussion happened and what happened. It also, that episode contains two of my, I think, one of my favorite surprise moments, which was August going out to talk to Sasha. I did not expect Nino to be the one to instigate that conversation, nor did I expect that conversation to take the shape that it did. I felt very much like I was just kind of freewheeling on that one, and I was very happy with how it came out.
I was too. I didn't expect that either, but we were sitting there and she left, and I was like, I think truly the thought process was, if I let her go, that is a danger that I don't have an eye on. And I was like, it is more important to get her back in this tent and back on our side before she does something desperate, because desperate people make stupid decisions, and stupid decisions get people hurt. And that is always the train of thought that Nino is going on constantly, constantly. It is, how do I make sure that these people aren't making stupid decisions so that nobody gets hurt? And most importantly, so that I don't get hurt. And now that she's in charge, she has a little more leeway on that, which is what I was going to say was a surprising moment. I didn't think Nino was going to be put in charge of anything. And I'm surprised at how much I like it now.
Power. It is seductive.
It's an interesting subversion of the dynamics within like the friend group. And for you are the rule follower, and to the Soviet party, like that is the most important thing. It does it like Sasha, Rita, Dimitria, and Tatiana, they all have their own agendas that might affect their decision-making. And for Ninochka, their agenda seems to be survive on the right side of this. And that's what, you know, that makes for easy people to manipulate from the Soviet perspective.
It's a good thing you surrounded yourself with terrible influences.
Oh, yeah, no. One day she'll crack, but you gotta figure out where. She will crack, I'll give you that.
I can't wait to insert that in, like, the episode where it happens, like, a dozen episodes from now, as, like, a Force Ghost audio clip of, like, Nino does something way fucked up, and we just hear August's voice. Yeah, one day she'll crack. Like, a shit ton of reverb.
We've got the tick, 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 tick of, like, the interviews with Marina Raskova.
Elsa, Mads, any surprising moments from you guys?
My number one surprising moment was watching the interaction between Nino and Tati, to be honest, and then being like, because sometimes I feel like as a player, I have to stop myself from like, oh, I'm thinking like an actor. I want to jump in and offer my perspective on every single moment that happens because I want other people to see what my character's doing, because that doesn't serve the story either. So I was like having like a real hard time approaching Tati after that to be like, is this me putting myself where I don't need to be, or is this adding a layer of tension? So I'm hoping that it did the second one afterwards, because what I'm thinking of is like, Dimitria has been counting on Nino to be like a rock, or I think in terms of like inter-squad dynamics, like there's a pretty solid one there. So that's, I think, maybe what Ask Tati might have been about was, I think you're right, it must have been, because I was probably thinking about, like, how do I make there be tension between two people that we haven't had tension between before?
Yeah. I can't wait for the Dmitri and Ninochka, like, face-off, personally.
Tati in between being like, mom and dad are fighting.
Yeah.
Which one's mom and which one's dad?
Both.
Viewers, it's your choice.
Gender.
There was never such important gender.
If nothing else, I'll move on to Thorn Files podcast, which was a more simple question. What have you most enjoyed about recording season one? And I'll just say, like, one I'll call out is... oh Jesus, Elsa with the coffee, the tea and the tears is like that.
Oh my God.
What Rita did there was, it was both one of the most surprising things. I was totally not prepared for that. And also it, I think maybe was the funniest thing in the podcast until I made Ninochka talk to a room full of people about their dead relative.
I have a one line joke that I really loved if anyone needs more time to think. Kevin with the, oh, you're giving me your full name. All right. Just, I don't know why it took me out so hard. It was, like, such a non sequitur, and it was, like, under your breath, too. Like, I think that's half of it. Like, it felt so genuine. Like,
wow, this, full name.
It was the nurse, right? What's her name?
Yeah, it was.
Vera.
Yes.
Vera. She sounded so tired. I think that's just kind of, I was like, wow, yeah.
For me, favorite moments include the introduction of Constantine, the dumbest name that's ever been. and how we as a group have run with that. And how, going back to, like, how Constantine does have a very legitimate beef with the rest of us. Like,
yes!
Specifically me, like, I did get his brother sent down the river. And
like, you totally are villains in this guy's story.
He's like, you ruined my life. And I'm like, for me, it was Tuesday.
And all he did was put our beds out. That's all he did.
No, I essentially got his brother murdered. And I'm like, and you don't want to fuck? Like,
I don't see what the issue is.
Yeah.
You took everything from me. I don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
I'm astounded at this, like, Constantine, first of his name, the dumbest name ever created, breaker of chains. Like, yes, we have to have, like, epithets for this guy.
So some personal favorite moments are besting him at flying. That was a big, like, shit. Like, we have talked this up a lot. Like, let's just hope the dice go in our favor. And for once, they did. It was an important moment of triumph for our group, I feel like. And then the evolution of, it seems like, the uneasy agreement and friendship between Rita and Demetria, who seem to be even more so at odds than, like, Rita and Ninochka, because, like, I feel like Rita sees Nino and is like, a lost cause. Like, there's no...
Why bother?
There's no feminizing that to Rita. So she's like, and you are this blob that I don't have to worry about. But Demetria has, like, a dangerous edge to them of, like, choosing to be neither, that I think really gets under Rita's skin. And that, so I think moments such as when Demetria's like, would you like to brush my hair? You know, yeah. that kind of moment. Particularly juicy. Also, any time that the rest of them, you guys, get to flex, like, that you have come up with backstories and you have other people in your imaginations and your lives and old folk tales from your, you know, villages. And I'm like, whoa, these guys thought about this. Is always juicy for me.
That is so weird, because it's like, Rita is one of the most well thought out characters. Like, every choice you've made, I'm like, no, that is exactly what this person would do. And she shows up every time. And that's really cool that you don't need to think. So you're just good.
Well, for me, it's less that I have a narrative about her and more that I have core values attributed to her. So if you're moving from a place of values, it's easy to then be like, oh, sure. And there's a there's a story behind why she does that. Mm-hmm. She's not going to tell you because I haven't thought of it. But like, it's also in character for her to not share that information. She doesn't share that with anybody. She's probably the person who has revealed the least about her life, in spite of us having characters who have a lot more reason to, who have a lot higher stakes to share, a lot higher stakes preventing them from sharing about their lives. They still do. Rita's like, none of y'all get to know what's behind these doors, even though it's statistically, or she's not an endangered person amongst these people. She just isn't like that.
I fear sometimes that people or other players will mistake Demetria's disdain sometimes for Rita's methods for Madison not liking Elsa or Madison
not liking Rita.
yeah, no. So I'm like, any of the like Sasha v. Rita moments where Rita has clearly won, like I think a lot of those are highlights for me, or anytime that like Demetria gets put into a situation of like, I don't agree with this, but that is my girly pop, so like hands off.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting to like kind of get reminded that Rita's revealed the least about herself, because I feel like Demetria and I are both kind of operating under the assumption of like, well, no one would conduct themselves this way if it wasn't armor, right? But that's both of us having the internalized like, oh, I have to kind of release this femininity because it's not serving me, and not someone could be using this to empower themselves. So I'm sitting here realizing like, oh, I don't really know anything about Rita. Huh.
It's also like that armor says something to, especially in this context, in this, you know, like historical context, for you to not be like other girls is not cool yet. Like, it's not the, like, I'm, you know, different. I'm quirky.
I'm different.
No, this is very much, we are living in, like, probably the time where you most want to be conforming. Like, Soviet Union, army, you know, 1940s. Like, every single one of those things should make you want to conform. So the fact that Demetria doesn't, to someone like Rita, at least, is like, It's like the Regina George, like, so you're insecure. Okay, about what? Let's find out.
So you agree. You think you're really pretty.
Yeah, so you agree. Okay. You think you're different. Okay.
She's activated my trap card. It backfired. It hurt itself in its confusion.
Rita played psychic. Played a psychic move on Demetria.
One thing I wanted to add, every time that we are, like, on a mission or up in the air and, like, people, whether it goes really well or it goes really bad, there is such a camaraderie in the group. Like, when we do good, everyone is so fucking hype, and it is just so wonderful. It's just like, it feeds the character, it feeds the player, and it's just like, yeah, that's why we do it.
We have so much control over the role play aspect of it. Kevin is the one who is the arbiter of like how the role play goes, and I just feel like there's a way to worm anything that I want to have happen as long as we sell it well enough, but the dice don't care. That's what scares me every time we have to get into the plane of like,
yes,
it doesn't matter how cool my little guy is because the dice might kill her anyway.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
That's the hilarious part about us being so low ranking. Is like, y'all, we didn't have stats for like almost the whole first season. We were just blobs.
We were just guys. We're just a guy.
Just guys being dudes up there, you know?
I'll just quick shout out to the game design on this, which is that like early levels in any TTRPG are brutal, but this is particularly brutal because the chances of you succeeding without any kind of consequence is so astronomically low compared to like even like a 15 DC check in D&D. Like 25% of the time you're fine. You have a very narrow margin with how the dice are set up in this, and you're so likely to fuck it up. I'm shocked we have not rolled Snake Eyes yet, because I didn't run the numbers, but like we were due.
Somehow we got a lot of our bad rolls in Snake Eyes during like social situations where it still hurt, but it didn't kill us. Maybe we wish it did, but it didn't.
I believe this is also from the Thorn Files podcast. What is another niche historical event or group you'd want to see as a TTRPG or as an AP? I will open this up with, I picked up a game at PAX Unplugged where you may have seen me dressed in full jumpsuit with a Russian hat and covered in Wing Women advertising. Yes, you were not imagining things in your 3-day caffeine haze. I found a game called, I think, Hell Whalers. I'll double check the name of that, and if we need to correct it, we can. But which is gamifying religious drama, whaling, and the 1840s, which are three of my favorite things.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Whaling?
Yeah.
Things that come to mind are... this was like one episode of like season three of The Crown, but it was like the great fog, like the great smog that settled upon London as a result of like a coal accident. That would just be like an interesting one shot, especially if there's some actual like supernatural element to it, you know. Secondly, one that I feel like would actually make a maybe more than a one-shot. I am fascinated by cults and serial killers and the 1970, like late 1960s and 70s in the United States, and also about like satanic panic in the 80s. So like I was disappointed when Stranger Things wasn't about like an actual kidnapping. Like when I was like, oh, and there's a demon from the upside down, blah, 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 it's supernatural. I was like, aw, I wanted it to be the West Memphis 3. So that being said, like I literally just picked up a book, a graphic novel called The American Cult. So something to that effect where there is a cult element in the pre-internet America would be very compelling to me.
I'm just afraid that this exists already. Or rather, I'm inviting that if this does exist already, someone will let me know on the internet. And I'm sure they'll do it politely. But I...
Please.
I'm so deeply obsessed with Grace O'Malley and the 1600s, specifically of Ireland, and resisting English control that, like, I don't necessarily think it needs to be, like, Grace O'Malley the board game, where this time she does it, guys. We kick the English out for good. But, like, some kind of resistance against that, I think, would just be the thing that speaks to me the most. Because I know for a fact there are, like, hundreds of TTRPGs set in Victorian times.
Mm.
Like, suffragettes have to be a thing. Like, Edwardian era, just the aesthetic of it. But in lieu of saying any of those, I'm like, I would like to be a pirate, please.
I was just going to say, I will say the one time someone recommended something to someone on the podcast, it was to me, and they did do it very politely. They were like, oh, God, Elsa talking about environmental horror. Please tell her if she hasn't played Prey, she has to. I have it downloaded on my Xbox. I just haven't played it yet. I'm sorry to whoever wrote in that I haven't played it yet. But they were very nice about it. We have nice listeners.
We do. That's very cool.
We do. Save for that one person we got rid of.
I just have such a knee jerk about being a lady on the internet for 30 years.
That is totally fair.
Are you 30?
Yeah.
What?
I'm going to be, guys, yeah. I'm going to be 30 in a few months.
Wait, no, but Julian, that makes sense because you're tall and older than me, so.
Guys, I have a new favorite moment of the podcast, and
if I could see over this recording setup, I would be very upset.
Madison, I'll say the first time I met you, I thought you were a sophomore in college. It was shocking to me when I found out you were a senior. You carry yourself with so much youthful joy and energy.
You have excellent skincare. This is where Rita and Elsa lines blur. Your skin is beautiful. You have like no signs of aging. You have thick, luscious hair, and I'm sorry, but your petite stature doesn't hurt.
Thank you.
Whereas Julianne has been my older sibling in the greater tri-state area theater community for many years now. So if I'm
the crypt keeper at this point.
Now, if I'm 5 years older than I was when I met Julianne, then that makes sense that they are also 5 years older. So
how old do you think I am?
Aren't you the same age as me? So you're like 27, 26?
I'm 26.
Okay, great. I also, okay, great. Now that we've all established how old we are.
How old is Kevin?
Kevin is 26, but he is a month younger than me.
Yes, and a month older than August. And I do live and look like a Major League Baseball coach, so I do often get mistaken for 40. Mm-hmm. I had a job interview the other day where they said, are you lying about when you graduated? Because you don't seem like you're 26. You seem like you've seen some shit.
I mean, you have.
I have.
Haven't we all?
So just to like a really quick sidebar, I'm doing the show that I'm working on right now. A lot of folks are like younger than me. We have like a pretty decent spread, like, but someone that specifically I know is 26 is also just tall in real life. And she's wearing these humongous heels for the show. And my character is my sized, if you can believe it, and also wearing flats. So she looks down at me and she's got like this long dress on and her like cigarette holder. And she looks so chic and gorgeous. And she looks down at me and like has to look down. And I like looked up at her to say something. And she went like broke character in front of people and was like, I don't think I ever realized how short you were before. Oh, my God. And then picked me up to hug me. Like, she just couldn't contain herself. She had cute aggression. And
so
I was like, Delaney, you have to put me down.
So you lived the fantasy?
Yeah, me and August are on the same wavelength,
yeah,
right?
I think that was a clip that came out around the time Lady Dimitrescu
premiered. Sounds familiar. Yeah.
No, I'm thinking of the meme image of, like, the two lesbians where the one is getting pinned against the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, to be a little guy for once in my life.
Short king.
That this is also, I mean, this is related to the podcast. This isn't a tangent because one time people asked like we were discussing how tall our characters are, and I said Rita is 5'7" because I'm 5'7" and I can't imagine being another height. So this is all relevant.
Episode one, baby.
Mm-hmm. We can move. What is every character's favorite food? I'll come up with some NPCs.
Rita doesn't eat.
Nino loves a beef stew kind of meal, you know, like long simmered, lots of potatoes.
This is a tough question for characters who have experienced massive food shortages for the majority of their lives, admittedly.
She caught the cow. You know, well, she didn't catch it. She raised it. She raised the cow. She helped it come out, let it wait a while, ripened it, and now is in stew.
Sustainability, homesteading. Ninochka, homesteading icon.
Nina in the woods with a harpoon gun and a snare trap waiting for a cow to walk by. Oh, this is going to be so fucking good when I stew it later.
I'm going to stack up big plans.
Low and slow, I found some rosemary.
I think that Tati's favorite, because it's like she had like some pocket money growing up and stuff. Maybe. I think she's a big sweets person. And there would probably be like this little like... Not like a bakery, but maybe a bakery that had like little sugar flowers on like a cookie or something. Like, I think that would be something she would get, but she would have to like eat it on the way because the mom and the problematic things that she would say about her body, probably.
Oh, you mean like Rita doesn't eat?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what Tati's mom would say. She smacked the cookie out of her hand and goes, Rita doesn't eat. And I'd be like, who's Rita?
Who's Rita? Yeah.
Anything that is a vehicle for more coffee, I think. So I'm thinking of like an almond croissant or like a biscotti or something, but like at a cafe where you can like take your time and like people watch on the way.
Ooh.
But it is also just a coffee vehicle.
Mm-hmm. To give a pun intended substantive answer for Rita, probably half a grapefruit. With one of those pointy grapefruit spoons and like a martini, like a dirty martini, like it'd be gross. But yeah, I don't think food is something that I, Elsa, care a lot about. It is not something that Rita cares a lot about. I also think, frankly, it's uninteresting to play in a game. So I'm just like in this kind of game, I should say. So it's like, yeah, it never occurred to me what her favorite food is because she doesn't eat. She doesn't really think about it. So she doesn't have one. She doesn't have one. She doesn't care.
I remember one of these like absolutely wild stories of Marina Raskova and like how she became famous and like did all these flights. One thing that she was like known for is like she and this other person who was in the plane with her, her navigator, like they jumped out of a falling plane and survived in like the winter in the wilderness with nothing but like some rations, and they specifically pointed out that Russian rations would include a bar of chocolate. So there is a stupid headcanon where it's like Tati joined out of spite And then also is like, I'm going to be just as good as my brother and blah, blah, blah. My dad will be proud of me. But also there was a thought in the back of her mind. She's like, I got fucking chocolate. That's fucking great. I got a fucking chocolate
bar. They have chocolate there.
They got chocolate. She'd have like the little white woman t-shirt. And so it's like, oh my God, chocolate? Sign me up. It's wine o'clock.
Okay, Juliet, I'm just going to say, my grandpa never had Russian chocolate, but he had American Army chocolate. Do you know what that stuff was designed for?
Just for like sugar or something? Like what?
It was specific, at least in America, Hershey, the directive was design it to give the guy enough sugar to die. Like enough sugar to have the energy to go do something suicidally stupid. And they designed it to taste as awful as possible so they wouldn't be tempted to snack on it.
Well, it's a good thing Tati hasn't eaten it yet. She's saving it for a good day.
There's also some kind of caking agent to help it prevent from melting, because a lot of this was for guys in the Pacific where it would get to like 120 degrees in the shade when it was inside packs. So that made it taste awful too.
Isn't it like the same coating that they use for M&Ms?
Yes.
So wait, I deeply agree when European people are like, American chocolate tastes like ass, but have we not changed the recipe since then? And did they not know that?
Hey, I love a Hershey bar.
They have gotten marginally better from the 40s, according to my grandpa, God rest his soul. I'll throw out Olya, if she knew it was a thing, would be a big fan of a thing called the garbage plate from Rochester.
Oh, yeah, she would be.
Both for name and what it actually is. Look it up. Make one. It's worth it. Vera is very fond of a particular type of shoe leather that she ate a lot growing up. And then the captain likes any meal that is large enough that she doesn't have to think about eating for 2 days.
You think you could just go past the shoe leather?
Look, there's things about Vera that we're going to find out about in season two, baby. Don't worry.
So excited.
What are y'all talking about with this garbage plate? This looks like the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
No, it really is.
No. You gotta be culturally a slop in a bowl, family, and then you'll understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do your characters smell like?
Chanel number 5.
Mmm.
Baby powder.
Oh, that's so sad.
Not in a weird way.
It's so sad and so specific, though.
She uses it to keep dry because she sweats a lot.
No,
and she's really self-conscious about it, so she, like, powders up. God damn it, guys. Why'd you make it weird?
No, I didn't make it weird. It's that I knew exactly what you meant, and it hurt me.
August, save us.
Well, Madison got cut off.
Black coffee.
Pine needles and musk.
Which NPC do you want to know what they smell like?
Oh, wow.
Constantine.
Constantine smells like Henry Cavill after his regular cardio exercise. And for those of you who know what Henry Cavill does for cardio, you're cool.
If anyone else has seen the promotional materials for the movie Argyle, which I've heard is terrible.
Oh my God.
That is how I picture Constantine.
Gorgeous and with the worst haircut
you've ever seen.
Has ever had.
Yeah.
Actually, picture the Argyle haircut with the mustache and beard he has for the League of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which he looks like a cartoon character from the 1890s.
Correct, yeah.
Has anyone seen Argyle? Because it is truly atrocious. I loved it.
No, I haven't seen it.
I need to do a double feature of Argyle and Madame Web and just get absolutely hammered. And like,
oh, dude, yes.
The show I'm working on right now is a 1967 spy mystery. So we're like, this was for us. And then we were all like, this is bad. Wow, I love it.
Last question of the night, everybody. What are your insane batshit conspiracy theories for what is coming in season 2? I will not be answering anything.
I think we're definitely going to get haircuts.
Ooh.
Oh, that's crazy.
So dramatic.
That's wild. That's insane. Julianne.
Somebody's going to kill that cat for emotional damage.
Why would you say that, Elsa? Because Kevin's sitting right here.
No, if I say it, then he's not going to do it.
That's not true.
That's 4D chess you're playing.
I genuinely believe that Constantine is going to enact much worse revenge because he used the mattress thing as like a false sense of security.
And then we did cuck him, so... He's like triple angry at us now.
I think Olya's a narc. I think Olya is... I don't trust her. I don't know where her loyalties lie, and I don't think they lie with us.
Okay, I have an actual one. I think that the plane that crashed, I think that there was someone on there that we're going to find out and we're going to be upset about.
Oh, no.
I think that that's what's... I think that something's going to happen there.
I think someone's getting a girlfriend. My bet is on...
Who are you pointing at, Mads?
I was pointing at August, but I'm a little off-center of my
you
camera.
Are. So. You were a little off-center. I think it's a tie between Dimitri and Tatiana. I think, yeah, that's what I think.
I think that the most likely one is that someone is a mole.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might be like the overarching antagonist for season two is conspiracy and suspicion of each other and Olya and Sasha. Because it's easy to... I think like season one, the overarching antagonist was like the forces around us pushing our faces into the dirt. And then I feel like we might be presented with individual opportunities that as we kind of have laid out in this episode, like we've all discussed how like you have to make the choice that's both narratively compelling and in character, and how there are choices that are less compelling because they drive you apart from your party. But this is Soviet Russia, baby. We might be faced with some choices that are compelling and in character and divide us from our party members.
The idea that there's the hint dropped that there might be a narc somewhere and then we all tear each other apart trying to find it and it was just a rumor the whole time.
Yeah, but that's...
Kevin, write that down.
That's how they do that, you know? It's like, again, to cite the Wizard School books, there was always at least a couple chapters in most of them where the protagonists weren't friends because of some feeling of inadequacy or competitiveness between the protagonists. And I feel like we are due for some of that, where we all handled, well, for the most part, handled Ninochka's promotion pretty well. And I'm curious to see what happens when other options, avenues become available to us as we go to our next duty station. None of these are like conspiracy theories.
No, we're just musing, but I wanted to bring something up. I'm on the Discord for Bully Pulpit Games, where Jason Morningstar is actually like a really chill guy and is just talking to everyone and is like really cool.
Jason,
but
got a cool name.
Jason, you are so cool and so nice. Someone was just like, I'm running Night Witches, and they were just talking about it, and it was, they said that they had like equally to us the same like bonfire vodka sort of like chill down. He's just like, there was a lot of really cool moments for like building characters and like them connecting, and I'm like, yes. They said, I want to illustrate the themes they'll encounter again and again. They'll get laughed at, they'll need to scrounge, there will be bureaucratic bullshit, maybe there'll be romance, they'll meet the NKVD. To which Jason Morningstar responded, something to consider is the NKVD does not need to be this menacing bad guy constantly. The nation was at war and spies and saboteurs were a real concern. Starting them out as something other than oily villains makes their later appearance as oily villains even better. So I really, really love that. And I'm excited to see if something like that comes up from any of the characters and NPCs that we have loved so much throughout season one.
Oh, Kevin's making a face. He's holding himself back. He wants to tell us. Go ahead, Kevin.
No.
Why don't you just open your mouth and just let whatever's bothering you flow out of you like a jungle
river?
No,
he's savoring it like a hearty stew. Fuck off.
I'm sorry.
He was making that face because he was like, this is the best way to convince them I have plans.
Yeah.
I think we'll have a nice time.
I think that's a fair prediction. I'll leave with this and say that I'm a great believer that the best drama comes when the antagonist is the self. So we'll see what happens.
Well, damn, Kevin.
Thank you for listening to The Hanger,
the podcast within a podcast.
about a podcast.
About a podcast that's coming back very soon.
Featuring a podcast. Featuring
a podcast. Coming back soon.
Podcast?
Thank you.
Podcast, podcast,
podcast.
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 Okay, recording is resumed.
I know the 12 steps better than I know the 5 stages of grief. That's going in the recording.
I'm going to try this again.
I can't wait to cut this all together like a Pixar-style set of bloopers at the end.
Yes, that's what I picture every time we do this.
Like a ransom note of comedy.
I get a bunch of magazine clips taped together, slid under my door, and it just says, "Say something funny." Like, damn it, no, I can't.
I can't, not like this.
To the
hangar. I'm watching Julianne desperately try to pull it together.
I'm trying to get, okay. Hello, hello, and welcome to... Okay, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah, you're
even
right.
A little bit.